Or two. Okay, he's sleeping.
Ah, yes.
Okay. The next talk is about database publishing with LuaTech and the speaker, the publisher. And it's actually not about tech, although it's written here. It's a software which is open source, and I put it on GitHub so you can actually download it, try it, and use it. Hopefully. Okay, I start with database publishing. What is database publishing? It is just generating any kind of data or taking any kind of data and put it more or less automatically into a PDF file. That's what I would call database publishing. I don't know if there's a better definition, but it's something like you have a database and you just push contents into PDF. And an example, of course you need layout instructions. Without that, you would just end up with a list of all your data. And you need some kind of instruction that decides where to place what. And an example is you have an address list and a word or a text template, and you want to create lots of letters which have the same content but only different address. That's a very classical example of database publishing. It's also the most easy and the less demanding example. There are also, of course, different applications. More elaborate and more difficult use cases are product catalogs, and they can have really complex layout routes for layouting things on the page. The left example is a very easy one because it's just product entries just in the table, broken onto the next page, into the second next page, and so on until there's no more products in the database anymore. But it can get more complex if you have to arrange images, text, maybe text in different languages that should take up all this same amount of space, other kind of data, and then the demands or the demands on the layout can get very complex. This is the right one. It's also more a reporting thing, but it still has a bit complex layout because this text can be arbitrarily large, so the font size has to be decreased until the text fits on the page. So it's not easily done with a word or so, but it's also not that complex. Besides product catalogs, there are also spec sheets, reports, and offerings, timetables, anything that you can generate from data. And other things, of course. Yeah, how are these documents produced today? Mostly with GTP tools, InDesign or FrameMaker, Quark Express, and often with plugins or scripting. Martin Schröder knows very much about that. If you have any questions, you can ask him.
Yeah.
I think he's the right person to ask.
About scripting in design?
Scripting
my
and plugins.
My employer sells products for that, yes. I'm not the expert, but yes, I know
but
the experts.
I think you're the most...
I know the experts.
Yeah.
But only with InDesign, not with FrameMaker.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know if anybody does database publishing with FrameMaker.
I think FrameMaker used to be used a few years ago. But
it still exists, yeah.
Still exists, but not very much anymore. And Quark Express is still exists, but even that is less used, I think.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, there are special reporting software, for example, Jasper Reports, that can produce similar documents, or of course, if you're in the XML world, there's XSLFO, which can do something like similar. And we're here in the tech conference, so tech-based processes are also used to generate these documents. the classical solution we take is to use a Python, Perl, whatever script and generate these document class, article, statements to write a text file with all the data read from the database and run that text file later on to produce a PDF file. And I would call it, Martin hits me again, poor man's database publishing, because many things can go wrong. And why do I call this poor man's database publishing?
Yes.
Funny characters and data, very funny,
yes.
Percent sign or things like that, that can magically appear in data, and if you don't take care enough, your text process will stop, and with a question mark, and yeah, just an error messages. Of course, you can escape those, but you still have to take care of it. You just have to think of it. But it's not a general solution. If you write a script I've shown on the last page, it works for one use case, but not for a second use case. You have to reprogram everything most of the time. Automatic or positioning tech is not very fun. It works if you know how to do it, but you have to really think in how to position, how LaTeX or how to context position things. I think context is much more better in that subject, but it's still not really good. But placing logos somewhere is easy because there are special packages for that. But if you want to have some relative positions, like images, two images left to each or next to each other, then text with a certain kind of distance, and then other automatic positioning, it gets tricky.
We are working on that.
Pardon?
We are working on
it. Yeah. Okay, it's possible.
Yes.
But it's you have to actually do hard work to do that, or somehow.
And you probably don't want to do it in text.
Yeah. And same goes to macro programming. It's not fun. Some people might disagree with me, but
how many expand afters do you want? Yes.
Yeah. I cannot do that. I cannot really program complex macros in text. So, and no DTP elements. What I mean with that is, with InDesign, I think you can just create a few frames and say the text flows from this frame to that frame to the other frame, and this is hard to do in tech.
I recall some solution of my colleague from Ostrava some 2 years ago on Tech Period for a conference, which made only in tech programming to flow the text from several.
Okay.
Yes, there is a LaTeX package. The problem with LaTeX is you have packages for text frames, you may have packages for nonlinear text flow, and you may have packages for image shape. And you may have packages for tabulars and for that and that and that.
Yeah.
And then you come then someone comes along and asks you to combine everything.
Or to have make a little change.
And then your document simply explodes and you use run away screaming, or you ask Hans for a context solution.
It was done in plain, so I don't be afraid.
So it's a problem, not an unsolved, maybe not an unsolved problem, but still hard to do. At least for someone who really is not into tech. And this might be surprising. Good justified text in tech is not easy to get when you start tech. Novices start tech and they said, oh, why does this line stick out in the right margin? And tech is evil, it doesn't do very well justified text. Of course, you can put the parameters in, that in such a way that those lines or never happen. But then, at least what I found out, you make an overall where the paragraph itself gets worse because you have to enlarge whatever parameter is needed for this thing, and you cannot get a good line break, and dismiss all these rights or these lines sticking up into the right margin. So it's a bit tricky. You can have also a solution to the problem, but it's also not perfect.
But it will be perfect in other tools.
But still, it's a problem. You really want to avoid those lines sticking out on the right margin, because it's just a no-go. It's just can't do that in print whatever document. And so you increase all these parameters, I think emergency stretch and whatever they are called, and then the paragraph just gets worse. But the solution would be to typeset the paragraph several times. If there's a line sticking out in the white margin, just increase the parameters until the paragraph is rectangular shaped. So there, it's a problem, but it's solvable as well. Another problem is data sources. With database publishing, we have many different kinds of data sources, like Excel spreadsheets, SQL databases, CSV, and other binary formats, and many, many more formats. And how do we deal with this?
XML.
Yeah. Solutions convert the data structure to XML and process that. And this is really, I think, the only solution that is feasible. And why XML? I don't think I should show this slide because everybody should agree with me, but there might be some people say, oh, XML is evil because all those angular brackets. But I think XML is the only answer. It's just a standard, the standard for information interchange in some areas. It's very easy to structure information. Many, many tools that exist to parse and manipulate, transform, validate XML. And it's easy to validate if you have a schema. There are several different kinds of ways to ensure the integrity or the validity of XML files. And it's, then you have only one language or one data format to deal with. And if you're in the XML world, you can ask, why shouldn't I choose XSLFO, which is which is the supposed solution for this kind of problem space. But XSLFO is a standard. It's a W3C standard for page media, and contrary to HTML, which is not page media. You usually works like that. You have data in XML format. You enrich this data with layout instructions, what to place where, and you get a PDF. And this is done with XSRT normally, and these are called granular, but transferred to PDF. But there's a few problems with XSLFO. It's only usable for simple output. The standard is really complicated. It's a few hundred pages, and it's hard to get through.
It was designed by a committee.
It was designed by a committee, yes. And it's even, well, there's a question mark. If it's a, I don't know, if it's a bad technology. There's a working group, there's officially a working group developing the next iteration of XLFO, but I think even the large companies, Arbitext and so on, do not participate in this working group. So, even if it comes to the next level of XSLFO, we won't see it in the main products. So it's not really that because it's used in many places. But and the next problem is no optimization possible. And what does it mean? There's a product catalog like this. On the left page, you have three sleeping bags. And imagine you have a fourth sleeping bag. Which should go into the catalog as well, and it would, if you do that by product groups, it would take up for the next fourth sleeping bag just an almost empty page. You just place it one on the next page, but you don't want that. You want to rearrange that page, make the image smaller, rearrange the products to just fit the fourth product on that page. And it's
according to some strategy. It's
according to some strategy,
to
yes.
It's
the designer.
XML,
yeah, the designer should say what kind of strategies are allowed and what not. And it's absolutely impossible, not absolutely, but it's almost impossible to do that with XSLFO.
How much automation do you want in these type of layouts?
Well, you can, if the designer can state what kind of rules are allowed, let's say, okay, I'm allowed to reduce the image size by 20%. I'm allowed to reshuffle, I'm allowed to take away this picture. I can change this table and remove some information. Maybe these kind of things are allowed, which should be written down somewhere. And then this can be automated, of course. Well, it's just an example. I wouldn't do this. This kind of catalog. It's really just an example of the problem. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There are designers, but few.
Yeah. it's, as I said, not possible, or almost impossible to do that with XSLFO, and it's hard to do with existing tools, and except for things like Martin did.
Oh, yours.
Mine. Okay.
As one we work with. Both.
Yeah. So this is these are the kinds of problems you encounter in classical database publishing.
Yeah.
The solution, of course, you know. The
you
product I have written is also an XML to PDF workflow, which is takes XML data and layout instructions also formulated in XML, and they are not. In contrast to XLFO, these are not mixed and then rendered. Those are interpreted in the software itself. Okay, again, why XML? Why did I choose XML?
Can you go back to the slide, layout instructions in XML?
Yeah.
He will show it.
Huh?
I'll show
see
it.
It. Okay, thank you.
So the questions again, why XML? Why did I choose the layout? To do the layout instruction in the XML language. Editing XML with a text editor sucks, so why XML?
It forgets an I.
Pardon?
It forgets an I in the editor. So it's getting a
yeah, okay. I will change that later on. Okay, because there are several, of course, reasons, otherwise I wouldn't have done it. I take some parts of HTML and XSRT to describe whatever describe the layout. A good XML editor makes there's the I. So
from XSLT or from XSLFO?
XSLT. But just only a few. I want to extend it, but some of the ideas come from there. A good XML editor makes editing XML really fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, really. Believe me, if you have a decent editor with a Emacs, for example, with the NXML mode, when you have a schema behind it, or the XMG schema, it really great. Believe me, it's much better than in a plain programming language where you have to type in begin and.
Well, Eclipse exists, you know.
Okay, Eclipse and IDEs exist. Okay. You get syntax check, all everything that's incorrect will be marked as invalid. Auto-completion, which is really nice, and also integrated help system with tooltips. I can, if you have a choice of things, you can get a list of what means what. So it's really fast to create XML documents if you have a decent schema behind it.
Designing a good schema is also not easy.
No, it's not easy.
But if it's designed, then it is designed.
If it's done properly, it's really great for editing.
There's one more point, which is the data validation.
Yeah.
So it's you have to make sure that what you expect is what you what is in there is what is expected.
Yeah.
Up front, not doing it at tech or somewhere else.
Yeah. For example, if I
expect a number, it's a number or not some.
Yeah. I can, for example, I can say this is has to be an integer between 1 and 100, or 0 and 100, or I can use a regular expression, and the data which I enter must be in that format, so I can get rather complex. Syntax check. And again, strict separation of data and layout instructions. which is exactly opposite of that Tech does. You mix in content and layout instructions, which is, I think, it's okay for some things like documents, printed documents, but not for database publishing. I want to show two examples of the layout language, which is as I said, formulated in XML. I hope you can read it a bit. It starts with a layout element, and the way the system, the software works, is to read the data source, and when it comes to an element which is called data, I run all the commands or the elements, whichever you want to call it, between this record element with data, and this is then executed if in the data source I can come across an element called data, and which just does nothing besides placing text block with a given width, and the value which is printed is taken from an attribute in the source code, in the data source, which is I allow XPath expressions in all these attributes. Like here, I can use an XPath expression here, the same as in XSFT, you just write a curly brace and place your XPath expression there. Not all are allowed at the moment, but the list is getting bigger and bigger. So this is Hello World in the layout file. Another example, as I said before, ideas from HTML, XSRT and other standards like XPath. And this is, I forgot that. Multi-language interface, this is English. And you can, if you change this namespace to DE, you can switch to German instructions. And there is no restrictions of other languages, so you can create a Japanese or a Dutch interface. And then you have these commands in your language. And it's you see this tiny star here, it's fully documented, but it's currently only documented in German. So it's, I wanted to have a full English documentation by the EuroTech conference, but I think it's going to be the end of the year.
This year?
Yes. It has a bigger priority than my book. Okay, the next example is a table, and you can see the similarities between the my layout instructions and the HTML. That's tr denotes a row, a table row, td a cell, and another cell, and in the first cell there's just some text, and in the next table cell is an image. And you can see I have now row equals 10 and column equals 5. I put a grid on top of the page. I can choose the size of the grid, and if I give coordinates, the object will be placed at this position. If I don't give these coordinates, the system will look for next free space to put the object there. So it's internally, it remembers which parts of the page is occupied and which part is free, and then it looks at the object and it tries to, with some algorithm, to place it if I do not give coordinates here. So there's of course much more to the layout instructions. You can have loops and variables and many other kind of objects you can place on the page, which is two examples, and I would like to now look at how it's done internally. For that, I will start with Tech does. I've shown it in the Lua Tech presentation. When I write this source code in Tech, these high-level macros get it's not very accurate. It's just to show you, it gets changed into some VBox and some low-level commands. And from that, Tech internally, as I said before, will generate these internal data structure again before it's just shipped out to the PDF. So these, as I said, it's not very accurate, but these are the steps. You can think about how Tech does it. What I do is in my software is skip the first two parts and create this data structure directly, and just call put this tech.chip out, which puts this data structure in the PDF file. So I skip these parts.
Yeah.
Okay, the internal data structure is the starting point, as I said. And I use Lua programming and Lua tech function to generate this data structure. Tech to ship out to create the PDF.
Question is that all those funny characters Tech uses for different purposes can get in live or not?
Not anymore.
So I mean, they won't gobble, or do they want to?
They only come into place, I think, here at this place when it reads the input.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as Tech has read the input, everything is fixed.
Yes.
I hope so. I don't talk any garbage. And then, especially here.
So a dollar won't interfere.
No, I can put a dollar here,
mm-hmm.
and percent sign everything, Unicode in Lua Tech, and everything's fine.
All a question of cat code.
Yes, right. And at that point, I cannot access any Tech macros anymore. No expand after, no macro programming, just for me, easier Lua programming to generate the structure. It can
and do the calculations.
It looks almost like writing PostScript.
Yes, it's, very similar. But I will show you later, hopefully. Okay, why do we use Tech as a backend? I can use PostScript or. Case is not here, right? I use Lua Tech for building paragraphs. I use tech.linebreak to create paragraphs. It's built into Tech, and why should I reinvent the wheel? Because Tech does a very good job, very good job at it. I use comes with Lua Tech. It's the font forge library, and I use that for loading OTF fonts and access them. I use Tech for writing PDF, so I don't have to deal with that. And I've shown these building blocks, these boxes, glues, currents, penalties, and everything, these small units Tech has. And I use these to construct pages. And it's really nice because Tech has them. That's great. Hyphenation and ligaturing.
You're forgetting image inclusion.
Image inclusion, thank you. Okay, there are probably many more places I use Tech. But I just want to show what I'm not doing. I'm not doing any macro programming. Okay, so it's too complicated, and I fully agree. The grouping and things that are connected to the input language, Tech's macro language. And I do not use Tech font handling because it is limited. There's, for example, in Lua OTF load, which comes from context, there are two modes we can change, like mode render equals basic, I think, and render equals node, or node equals basic, or mode equals node. And the basic one uses Tech font mechanism, like ligaturing and kerning, and the mode equals node uses internally replaced special Lua code for it to deal with more complicated ligatures and with more complicated OTF substitutions,
font
OTF features,
font size features. Changes?
Pardon?
Font size changes.
Yeah, I will show you in the next slide. Okay, coming back to the examples, so you don't have to read this code.
So what are the problems? With the font handling?
It's limited. because, for example, you cannot do complex ligatures with it.
Okay.
Yeah. And open type features, it's easier to program yourself than to create all those tech tables. I'm not sure if it's completely possible. So, for example, if you make a capital font and you want to change the sharp S, German sharp S, to the SS, it's an instruction, the OTF font, how you do it, and you just interpret it in Lua and replace a glyph. So it's all character. It's easier to circumvent the font handling than to actually press.
You could do also spell checking at that level, wouldn't you?
Yes, sure. But I don't want to do that in database publishing, because the output should be ready to give away.
Well, it should be, yes. Good.
Including spelling and pricing errors.
Right. Yes, this is my problem. It's a data problem.
Yeah.
Which is not my problem. Okay, coming back to those two examples of the text and the table. How does it work? I collect the data, the text, the Hello World example from before. I collect the data from the XML, or maybe static text written in the layout instructions. What's the time? How much? Am I too late? Or?
15 minutes.
Okay, it's almost at the end. So the first part is to collect the data internally, and then to create these glyph nodes, or curl nodes, and whatever nodes are necessary for the line, and call text.linebreak on this glyph list to make a paragraph. And the result is a V-box, a vertical V-box that can just flow into the PDF. So it's really easy. And we have seen that before. A glyph node is just a table of whatever font I use, whatever language I use for hyphenation, hyphenation, which glyph, and so on. And it's just a few simple instructions to generate this table. But of course, it's not all to the story. And we forgot color, fonts, font changes, boldface, and super subscript, which change the font size, hyphenation, and language support, and ligaturing, or OTF features, which add a big complexity to the routine here, but it's still not that complicated. And in the layout instruction, coming back to the font size question, in the layout instruction you say, if it's a product number or article number, put it in 12 points, whatever font. And you have this information. So you just create a new font instance, you have this load of font, and say, okay, load this font in another font size, then just change the font ID here to that chosen font. So it's a bit of work, but it's not hard.
Once done, it's there.
Pardon?
Once done, it's there.
Yeah. So no real magic involved. Okay, this second example, the table, is a bit more complicated. We have the cell contents, which is very tight, in a tight box, vertical box, for example, and it follows the HTML standard a bit regarding to padding and rules. So we have this V-box, and we add padding on the left and right side. It's just a glue node, or two glue nodes, and we put this into an horizontal box, which is, of course, tied to this. It's not, doesn't have a space here, it's just for example purposes. And we do the same for top and bottom. We add glue nodes for padding. It can be zero if the user chooses not to have any padding in the data cell or table cell. And then we add optionally those roots if the user chooses. We put this into a V-box. And then we add roots to the left and right. And we put this into an H-box again, and then we have one data cell, table cell. Then we connect these with other table cells to form a line, and then we put this many lines with a V-box into a table. So it's a bit more complicated, but it's still doable. It's once written, it works for all tables. Doesn't change anymore.
There is a problem one could solve with tables being broken
onto
pages, just first thing, and doing sums depending on the number, sums on, say, numbers,
yeah.
You could do summing for the page,
yeah.
And carrying on the sum for the next page, which is normally a difficult problem because you don't know in advance how the page will be broken,
yeah.
Depending on the material which fits in there, and so on. And how high the cells are.
Yeah, we know how much place we can occupy in advance. So when building these table lines, we know when to stop, when to ship out the table, and then we go to the next page and continue with the table. And we have optionally a header and a footer. And currently it's not possible to do the summation, the number of number of table cells or lines or so.
You can do it later.
Yeah, but it's not that big a problem extending this. So it's a...
So you see when you have enough for for one page and then you ship it out, or do you look ahead at what would go to the next page?
Currently I just ship it out.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Full is full. So you don't try to squeeze the page depending
what
on what's coming next.
I can do this. I can say, do not type it on the actual page. Put it into a box, into a virtual page. And after I've done it, I can look how big the page is going to be. If it's too large, just I can throw it away and retypeset it. So I can do this until the page fits.
With change parameters.
The example I had in the first or second slide on the right, which where I said the font size has to be reduced until the text fits, it's just done with a virtual page. I typeset it, measure it, if it's larger than the area I have enough for space, I throw it away, retypeset it until it fits, and then I ship it out to the
1 point size font.
Yeah, there's a limit, of course. But it depends on the application. Okay, this is a bit complicated, but still it's doable. And I think I should go to the end now. I just switch through very quickly. Images usually take up a rectangular space, shown here with the yellow marks. And I've said again before that I have a grid system. So all these cells that are used by the image are marked as occupied or allocated, but it's an experimental feature. I can say, please take the shape of the picture into account. And so I can actually only allocate these tables or these cells that are actually used by the image, which is done in a pre-processing stage. So I can look at all the images I will include and then generate the shape information with image magic, for example, and then I can just flow text around it, which is of course easy again because I know the place
and
the
grid. You have the grid.
I have a grid and I can have a take par shape to change the line size. So there again is no real magic, just some programming involved. Okay, this is without the grid allocation. Okay, just one slide again with some facts. It's as I said, open source. You can download it on GitHub. It's very fast. This tech is very fast. First page, usually very fast, up to 1-2 seconds on this machine, and up to 300 pages a second, which depends, of course, on the complexity of the document. If you load many fonts in advance, it gets slow. It works fine with a great variety of documents. It's in contrast to the tech solution, which I called Truman's database publishing, which just works for one application. The software is a building block for generating different kind of layouts. The software is of course never finished. A lot of room for improvements. For example, text cannot be broken onto the next page. Which is, oh, you can do that, it really sucks. But in product catalogs, you don't do that. Because either the text is on one page or on the next page, but you do not break the text, usually. So I never had this problem, so I never built it in. It should be not too hard to do it, because I know the node list, and just can cut it. It's a set multi-language input. And again, fully documented, but English is under development. Hopefully there by the end of this year. And of course, help is welcome. Many things to do. Okay, that's the last slide. You can download it, and that's the way you can contact me. Questions? Other those then ask in between.
What about conditional processing?
You mean like switch
in layout?
Yeah.
If something is present, then use
yeah.
the different layouts.
If I have a full, it's a Turing complete language, so I have these switch case test. You can, yeah.
Did you get any death threats from Boxgate?
Yes, many. This is very similar to a system which already exists, but it's I think a few steps further. Boxgate has more features.
Yes.
But I have different kind of data source, and XPath support is not in that system, and it's not free. You cannot really use it. So I think it's enough differences to present it here.
And programming language and
programming language is 99% dual. Well, it's 99.9%, I think. I can show you a tech file.
How many lines?
I will show you. The Lua code,
yeah.
It's not very much. It's 3,000 lines or so.
Oh, that's not very much.
Which is okay, this is my text file. You can. Yeah. So this is like. 16 lines, and I think some of this is not even necessary, like this char dev, PDF color stack. I just haven't had time to do it in Lua yet. So it's just, I run Lua tech minus minus ini, so I do not even use plain tech, because there's no need for plain tech here. So I have to change the cat codes of the braces, and yeah, I need these primitives because of the PDF color stick I think. I'm not sure. And then just jump into the Lua mode and start the program. And that's it. So, the rest.
So you're using Tehack library, more or less?
Yeah. I really would like
there
to have
a
program.
Tech
that
is called Tech as a library.
The fact that it even needs a Tech input file is. A missing feature in Lua.
But it's okay, I mean,
yeah.
It works fine, so no need to change it.
Right. All these lines are basically doing stuff that, to get to this point where it can say require, publisher,
yeah.
And so all these other lines, there is no boot up mode in Lua Tech.
Yeah.
How much?
And that's what's missing.
How
actually,
much
I think you can probably do a lot of that already in LuaTeX. Like, is the power stack really?
Yeah, I didn't have fine.
Power stack
yeah,
the rest is absolutely necessary.
Yeah.
So then you don't need the braces, etc.
No, you do need the braces.
Yeah, I need direct Lua. I need this much.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that can be that Lua, isn't it? You can.
No, the rest is really needed. Seriously.
Yeah.
No.
Actually, it works, so don't change it. Why should I change it if it works?
We'll all get around to this.
And I've dropped the coroutines thing, so I don't know.
Oh.
Yeah.
So I used to switch back and forth between the...
That's extra good, because you were the only user of this coroutine. So now you can feel free to throw it out.
No. No, certainly not.
The question is, my problem is that I have to produce lots and lots of one or two pages documents,
yeah.
A few pages
yeah.
out of XML files
yeah.
coming in. Separate XML files, not one container
okay.
for XML documents.
Yeah.
So it's it would be nice to be able to ship out a complete PDF document and not reinitialize the engine. So
yeah.
sitting there and waiting for a signal saying but another page came,
yeah, yeah.
Another XML document is coming up. Is it doable here?
I'm not sure. I think that's the question for Taco because
how long was the startup time? Nearly nothing.
0.20 seconds
yeah.
or so.
But I still have to load it.
Well, then run five things in parallel.
Yeah.
If you want, is the fastest.
But then you have
okay.
to arrange the queue, the two queues.
Actually, the fastest way to do what you want is to generate one large PDF
yeah.
file and then extract the PDF pages you want.
That
would
be my solution.
What everybody keeps telling me, but I'm not happy with that. I would rather ship out pages when
okay,
they come
then
in.
Then start 5 or 10 or 20 instances of tech and have them scheduled.
Yeah.
It's
easier.
The problem is that the engine has lots of state internally about what font has been used and what characters in the font have been used. And that depends on your input.
These are the same style documents.
Yeah.
You have not the same text in them.
So the subsetting, for instance, if the two pages have different subsets, yeah, well, then you again lose the time by redoing that. So you don't gain anything by staying in its state if you have to throw everything away and start anew. It's only the startup time that you're worried about.
So currently I do any caching. So if you have complex fonts, it will start slower. But if you have a really problem with the startup time, I think we could implement some font caching, so it takes just the internal data structure used to, that I use for the fonts, and do not load them every time it's needed. So there is still enough room for optimization, but as long as I don't need it, I won't do it.
I have another question about the layout spec,
yeah.
XML layout spec. It's interesting because it's something, but you have to teach this to the designers.
No, no, designers won't do that.
Yeah, and then how do you do it?
I call the designers
and talk to them.
Yeah, how should I do this?
And
they
then make a sample.
Yeah,
going through all the cases, possible cases.
Yeah. Well, the reality, what happens in reality? Not every possible case, but practical cases, because. In my opinion, the designers are not programmers. They cannot really structure what they, well, they can structure it, but not enough to have a computer, to have all cases as a computer needs to have. So that's the interface between the programmer and the designer who asks the designer questions until it has
a schema for the language?
Yeah. I will show it to you. No, don't save. I hope I can increase font size. Okay, there it is. I do not have F13 on my keyboard.
Well, that's the idea. That's a schema as an XSD.
No, it's a RelaxNG.
RelaxNG.
Yeah, and I have this English schema with some help text in it. And I have a translation file, and I generate all the other languages, currently only German, from that English schema. So I have only one place to change it. And if I create a new just a second. Okay. As I said before, I can just type. Oh, I can't see it. Just type an angular bracket, and I get all the possible allowed instructions. And for example, if I call define color, and it gets okay, you have to supply an attribute called name and the allowed things that I can use. Or
what tool is it?
It's Oxygen XML, which is a commercial editor, but I think Emacs with the NXML mode is very good as well. I've used it before.
Mm-hmm.
So this makes typing in these layout instructions very quickly.
I think we should stop now.
Yeah. Okay.